Oh.
Okay.
Ah, there we go.
Was that Andy?
That's Andy, yep.
Hi, Andy.
Hey, Andy.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, thanks.
How are things in Minneapolis?
Things are not too bad. The sun is shining.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
I know.
Not here. Okay, so Naradzu, are you the moderator?
I don't think Bob's not joining us.
No.
So I guess we can go ahead and get started. As you started talking about the articles, that's where I was actually thinking that we might start, like, what we got out of the two that we all had to read. And I was just about to make a comment that it's kind of interesting that I had read the one before, the George Cobb one.
Yes.
And it seems like, and I'd heard him, give the talk, like, at the very first ASCOS, or US COS, whatever we call it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's for the first time I got it. So it's kind of interesting that it took that long for me to get what he was talking about.
Well, Naradzu, this is Aisha. The thing, it's funny that you said that because I had a similar experience, but I had read the article when it just came out, and when I pulled it, I realized I had read it, so I went back to my file to grab it, and I looked at all the little writings that I had, and I was, I just had things like, there's no way this can happen. This is, he's dreaming, come teach at my school type of thing. And then, and I looked at it a second time and just gave it a second read. I could see the potential. I could see the possibility more now than I did, maybe a year ago when I first read it.
Right.
But I just think that was very interesting, too. And again, I'm sorry if I'm coughing. I'm trying to get my coughing controlled. I apologize in advance.
Oh, we know you're sick. Don't worry.
But I was wondering what were some key points that came up for people for either one of the articles, the Cobb one or Bob's chapter that he wrote, Medical Statistical Reasoning.
I'm taking notes, so I'm trying to. I know you guys have all done this before. I'm the last one, I think, to be the recorder, so now I can appreciate trying to take notes
and
talk at the same time, take notes and think. What really jumped out at me in the Cobb article is what I had kind of come across in teaching simulations maybe 2 weeks ago in my class. We're, as I mentioned before, we're using the DeVoe, Velleman, and Bach book for data, stats, and models, newly this term. And you know how it is using a new book. And we make extensive use of this book and ActiveStats and Minitab and just really like the students to use the book as much as possible. But in any case, we're doing simulations. I had them work on a problem. They had a choice of one of two simulations to do for a Minitab project. And as they did a simulation that they were trying to, the question was, simulate a group of 50, and they had to do this multiple times, and if there's a 20% chance that a person can quit smoking without any treatment, this medicine says that it can, in its research, it's shown that 12 people out of 50 is what they expect. And that's more than the 10 out of 50 that you would expect just with no medicine at all. So they had to evaluate the claim of this company, and they had to do this with repeated simulations. And just as I was reading through the simulations and I was looking at that point, or at this point, students don't know what statistically significant is going to mean. This is supposed to set them up quite nicely for it. And it did. It did it very well. And as I'm reading just their answers to this question, I'm thinking, wow, this is a perfect intro to hypothesis testing. And then when I was reading George Cobb's article, and that's exactly what he was talking about, was this simulation, among other things, to introduce that, and it was just a big aha moment for me. Mm-hmm. We do that anyway. We use a card experiment to intro the hypothesis testing with what proportion of the deck is black or red, and you make the deck all red or you make the deck all black. And we have a mini, you know, just a little simulation that way too. But this was even more so because they had used the mini tab, and they had gone into great detail repeating this time after time after time and then coming up with their own conclusion. Do you think that there is a difference? Anyway, that really stood out for me, the whole idea of simulations.
Well, when I was reading the article this second time, what was interesting to me was that I think of myself as someone who is, you know, abreast of what's happening with statistics and false thinking.
Aisha, could you speak up just a little?
But you can't really hear me.
I can't hear you very well, just a little louder.
Okay. I'm afraid if I speak too loudly, I'll start coughing and then...
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Is this a little better?
Yeah, that's good.
Okay. About the club article, I was saying that, you know, one of the things that I have a big, you know, star next to, for me personally, was just the idea of having students get into the habit of asking about randomization. It's so funny because I'm... Well, not funny, funny, strange, because last week I was teaching the ANOVA unit, and, you know, we were using it, motivating it as, you know, extending it from the two sample and so forth, and we were talking about assumptions, and I'm always drilling them about assumptions, and I remember, as I read this, I remembered that at some point in time, I said, well, you know, there's always one that we really should check, right? But we don't spend a lot of, you know, we don't really spend a lot of time talking about it. And it's just the simple random sample one, the whole idea of randomization. So I thought it was funny, strange that, you know, here he was saying that we really should get the students into the habit of, you know, figuring out where was the randomization, what inferences does it support, but I think I may have been, at the very beginning when we were dealing with randomization, I'm really stressing it, but as I go along, I tend to focus on the other assumptions,
mm-hmm.
you know, like the equality of variance stuff and all of that stuff, and I guess that was a big aha for me personally, just realizing that I had this disconnect that I was, giving to my students, basically.
It's like just assuming that the students will remember it just because we feel really strongly about it. But in the Rossman and Chance article, which Jennifer sent out to us, or the link to it, they mentioned that also. And the new textbook I'm using does as well. But so just hammered home in all three of those. I can't remember which article it was, but one of them was talking about, I think it was Bob's chapter about math as a symbols and signs and
right.
metaphors, and I was really excited to read that. I actually found a couple articles on semiotics theory, which is, you know, the theory of signs in math ed, and that you know, we could talk about a little bit later for maybe reading next week.
Go ahead. Something else I was in that same article that Jennifer had sent us, in terms of just as me as a teacher, when they talked about accompanying tests of significance with confidence intervals whenever possible,
mm-hmm.
and I said, oh yay, we do this, and my students tend to you know always have their confidence intervals, but then I stopped and I had to ask myself, I actually wrote a question saying, you know, my students seem to have a preference for doing confidence intervals instead
mm-hmm.
of doing, as they say, the whole hypothesis test.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's not clear to me whether or not they're choosing to do the confidence intervals because they have because they understand it better, or if it is just simpler in terms of calculation. So that's, as I was reading, one of the other questions that came up to me as I thought about how this is. Played out in my own classroom. So,
so you think your students prefer the confidence intervals, and you're not sure why?
They do. If I don't give them a choice, they tend to do synthesis test using a confidence interval instead of using the, you know, p-value method or whatever it may be.
And I think that...
Now that I think about it, again, until I was actually reading this, I hadn't really thought about confidence intervals or what my students are doing with it or anything like that. But that's just a question that came up, you know. They seem to prefer confidence intervals, but why? Is it really that they understand, you know, what's happening behind it?
I think that they see it in the media a lot. I mean, especially right after an election, you know. I mean, the whole so in such and such a percentage with a margin of error of whatever. So I think it's more familiar than actually, you know, the scientific method.
Yeah, but,
where you go through.
But do they understand it?
Yeah,
do they understand? I have students who still, I am convinced, well, not students currently, but students in general, who I think, you know, have no clear concept of what a mean really is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, something that, you know, we would say, oh, well, they see means all the time and they calculate means all the time. But in terms of fundamentally understanding what a mean is, fundamentally understanding a confidence interval, I'm not so sure anymore.
I wonder if the Rossman Chance article had point number 9, using technology to learn about confidence intervals. So they have an exercise that they got from Moore and McCabe that I noticed that I liked it a lot. I think I'm going to try and use it next semester. But where they actually build, you know, they take multiple samples and find the different confidence interval for each one. And then, you know, they hopefully will intuit the whole idea of, you know, what the confidence means,
mm-hmm.
Rather than just showing them that picture, you know what I mean, where you see the true population mean and then a bunch of lines going across it. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. But
yeah, but I do this very same one here.
Mm-hmm.
I do this. But again, it's really weird because the way that our book is, it's just, you know, as Bob had told us last time to really think about what we all mean by hypothesis testing, because we'll be talking about different things.
Mm-hmm.
The book that we use, it just has, you know, like confidence intervals. It's so detached from the actual, you know, hypothesis test itself.
Mm-hmm.
I myself go back and make the connection,
mm-hmm.
but the book itself doesn't really spend a lot of time doing that. And I guess this is just, I'm thinking of questions that might be interesting to me, just really and truly, how much are the students connecting back? When they do confidence intervals within the realm of hypothesis testing, are they really thinking about all of the confidence interval activities that we did? Are they thinking about, you know, the simulations and so forth? It's just thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Georgette, going back to the confidence interval technology, there is an applet that I use with, we use it for our other stats course. We use a David Moore Basic Practice of Statistics,
mm-hmm.
and within there on their website they do have that applet.
Oh, okay.
And it's really neat because they do, you can do, you know, show 80, 90, 95%, 99% confidence intervals,
mm-hmm.
and show how they get wider and narrower, and you can do 1 at a time, 10 at a time, 20 at a time, and it really does get that idea of, you know, like you're casting a net out and trying to capture that true population mean in there. Sometimes you get it, sometimes you don't.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that students understand the concept of the confidence intervals better than they do the hypothesis testing. It seems simpler to them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they understand the concept of as well as, you know, we want them to, but I think that if you compare the knowledge of the confidence intervals to the hypothesis test, I think they get that better.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there's an activity that we use. When I started at our college, there was a simulation, simulation beads activity jar, and it's just a jar of 2,000 beads, and they're all different colors. And it has this paddle that comes with it that's 5x5. It's got holes in it. And you stir the beads up, and you take a sample of 25 at a time, and it tells you how many. It tells you what the true proportion of the beads is at the top of the jar. And let's say for green, there's 30%. So I have the students each take a sample of 25, and then look to see what their proportion is, and then they each
get their own confidence interval, and then we put all the confidence intervals on the board, and then I have them estimate what they think it might be, and then see how, what percentage of the confidence intervals that we constructed did actually contain the true population proportion, et cetera, et cetera. And then we use that bead activity again when we go to hypothesis testing. And that's really a nice... you know, it's not technology. You can't. You're not getting a huge sample. You're only looking at 25 at a time. But it's a nice, tangible, nice hands-on.
You know, one thing that caught my attention in the Rossman stand, we're talking about the guidelines of the Joint Committee, and said something about less theory as one of the things. And I wasn't sure what that meant, because it seems like. Well, there are three things that they put on that very first page. Emphasize statistical thinking, more data and concepts, less theory. And I said, less theory? So I just kind of wondered, like, I wonder what everybody else thinks. Am I understanding this right? What do they mean by less theory?
What was that in?
That was in the Rossman Chance, the one with the top 10 list,
yeah.
The very first page.
Okay.
There are three bullet points. And in the second one of the things they mention is less theory. And this is not, they're not saying this, they're saying this is something that comes out of the guidelines of the MAA-ASA Joint Committee on Undergraduate Staff.
So the part where they said less theory, fewer recipes, that one?
Mm-hmm, right at the beginning. But it was that comes that Cobb, the references from 1992, and so I've only been teaching since about 1992, so I don't really, or no, I mean after that, I mean in 2000, so I don't know what they were doing before. I've never really had time to look at an old textbook, so I assumed it was just, you know, the number crunching stuff.
Yeah, maybe that's what they, yeah, it just seemed to me, I just didn't understand what they meant by less theory. I got the fewer recipes, I was like, okay, so less of the procedural stuff, more of conceptual understanding. But I thought, when I think of conceptual understanding, I don't separate theory out from that.
Yeah, that's a good...
Kind of threw me a little bit.
Yeah, and I understand what you're saying, because I mean, that makes sense to me, too. Concept and theory, you know, I don't know what the difference between the two.
This is Andy. What are you guys talking about when you talk about theory? Are you all on the same page with that?
Oh, let's see.
Well, we don't know if we are. when I'm thinking about it, I'm thinking of the, how do I describe it? Like, the underlying theoretical basis for whatever, the theoretical understanding, the building blocks behind it.
Well,
I don't know if I'm saying that very well, but I don't think I'm quite as clear as I'd like to be about it in my own head.
In the Cobb article we read for this week, he was saying that a lot of the theory behind a lot of the things, a lot of the computation was based on computational limitations. I mean, they didn't have the tools. They kept having to come up with more limits or limits to the concept. And so I guess for me, the theory is that sort of that framework around what we're doing.
Right.
So we have the ideas, and then we have what we do. And so maybe less theory implies it has to do with that, because we have different tools now, so we don't have to keep thinking about all the different – what was it that he talked about, the when he was talking about the sun revolving around the earth, you know? He used a word. Hold on.
Epicycle?
Yeah, the epicycles. The theory has to do with that, just coming up with more hoops to jump through just to because we have limitations with our technology or something.
I guess I didn't think that much about it. I thought when I read theory, I actually read that as less focused on the formulas, you know, and understanding the math behind the formulas, you know, so less rote type of calculations and less focus on, are you guys hearing me? Less focus on like procedural steps. at least that's how, when I read it, that's what I thought. That's how I thought of theory.
I agree. That's how I look at it as well. You know, when I learned statistics myself, it was all number crunching and plugging into the formula, and it was not as much interpretation. And now it seems that because we have the technology, we can focus on the interpretation. We do need to know, you know, a check of the requirements and that we're using the correct test, but not so much the calculations behind the test.
I just pulled up the Gale College report just to look at that portion where they talked about less theory and fewer recipes. And it says, of course, almost any course in statistics can be improved by more emphasis on data and concepts at the expense of less theory and fewer recipes. To the maximum extent feasible, calculation and graphics should be automated. So it sounds, and Andy can correct me, as if they are kind of talking about focusing away from that sort of rote calculation, not so much spending too much time on the actual calculation itself, automating that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's what their intent was. Yeah. I would say George right now would argue, for instance, that you shouldn't even bother teaching the central limit theorem in your class.
Oh, boy.
Sacrilege!
Because why do you have to? I'll ask it. So why do you have to if you're going to use simulation, which George is a proponent of? Why would you bother to teach the central limit theorem?
Because do you mean because they would see that it was a normal curve once you?
No, I'm saying you can always recreate the sampling distribution based on simulation.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's kind of like what he was talking about in the article when he talks about the fact that a lot of the theory was developed because we didn't have, you know, simple ways of, you know, to kind of get around the calculations or so forth, an easy way to calculate. So I guess what Andy is saying is kind of, well, we have these simulations now that can get to, you know, what we need without the actual theory. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no need, right? The T distribution, for instance, was created so that we could estimate things, but we can do that with computation.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And when I referred to the simulation activity we had just in our class the other day, a student did the simulation 10 times, and they said, well, just by chance, with no treatment at all, 12 or more successes, 12 or more people out of 50 quit smoking just by chance alone. And as soon as, you know, I saw that one paper that says at least 12 or 12 or more, you know, just by chance, and I saw all these words, I thought, oh, my goodness. That's it right there. You know, that's right into hypothesis testing based on the simulation. And I didn't even teach them that yet.
Cool.
They don't even need me anymore.
You know, I think some of the resistance to, you know, or the tendency to stick to what we've always done.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because it's just force of habit. You know, you kind of get comfortable with that and you can't think of, okay, how am I going to talk about that without saying it? And you know, and I can see it. My students don't have, we're not in front of computers. You know, they're not all in front of computers. So if I'm doing any simulations, they're having to watch me do it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not doing it themselves. And, you know, I wonder how much they get out of just watching somebody do it. I'm sure it's helpful, but it would be nice if, I think that's part of my own limitations in trying out some of the things, because I want them to be able to do it and they can't really do it. And I can't think of a way around it, so I tend to go to the default, which is, you know, how I've always done it.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was reading this, which took me a long time to get through them, because my mind kept going off in all sorts of directions that it shouldn't
mind
be.
It.
You know, how that goes. I was actually thinking of, okay, how can I get a grant so I can get what I need to be able to try these things, and how can I get two groups of students, I do my, you know, the way I've always done it, and I change some things, really sit down and come up with a pretty much a new curriculum and see the effectiveness of, you know, the difference in that. I was just thinking of all these other things instead of So it took me quite a while to get through the reading.
Mm-hmm. What did you say that? What did you say that you were limited by?
Wow, there's so much that there's so much research to be done, and which was exciting to me since we're trying to figure out what are we gonna do, with all this information? What's the question? What are we gonna get at?
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of interesting. It was exciting for me that there's so much that we can do. We just need to focus it and get ready for JSM. Summer next year, and come up with a better defined question. And I know we talked about, we started talking about what do students think about hypothesis testing. So maybe that's something we can, before we leave today, we can kind of start thinking about what questions we want to include in the interview that we said we would do with the students. We can kind of have that same core of questions. And whatever else comes out of it.
Well, do we have a clear sense? Because what Bob had asked the last time was whether or not we each mean the same thing by hypothesis testing. And it's kind of just as we just saw when Andy asked what we meant by theory. We have different ideas of what theory means. Should we talk about?
Yeah.
Well, what we think. Hypothesis testing means to what?
Yeah, or should we just go straight to the questions?
We should talk.
Let's get an understanding of what it means to us, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of on the same page.
Can I just go back a minute, Narazu? You said that you felt that we do have a tendency to stick with what we've always done and what true or false a habit, and you were limited by something, but I missed that. Are you limited by the student's knowledge, or are you limited by your lack of technology in the classroom?
Well, I'm limited by the lack of technology in the classroom.
Thank you.
We have labs that we can go to, but I don't have computers all the time.
Do you have a graphing calculator that they can do simulations on, or that's not required?
There are calculators, but to do simulations and the kinds of things that we did with Beth and Alan and I can't remember the third person at the conference, where they were showing us some of the simulations that they have that are really cool to use and get at some of these concepts. But I just thought my students don't have access to those,
And
I was so as I was reading this, I was thinking maybe I could apply for a grant and buy laptops that we can use in the classroom.
Yeah, or there's even some good $20 calculators that can do those. There's a nice new one, the TI-30X. I don't know if you guys are familiar with those.
Mm-mm.
It's like a hybrid of a graphing calculator and a scientific. So it has lists in it like a graphing calculator does. It's pretty neat.
So I guess part of that limitation is my own knowledge of what technology is available. That's the other part of the limitation.
Yeah, the ones, the technologies I know, or I guess the applets that I know are just because I've taught out of Moore, and then I've also taught out of Rossman Chant, and they both use a lot. But we need to talk about what we think hypothesis testing is, so our own definitions of what it is. So I'll start.
Okay.
So I just listed, four things. Theorizing a change in a state of nature, collecting data to test whether or not the changes occurred, knowing how to do it, and grounding the process in context.
Okay.
Can you repeat those one more time for me? I'm trying to take it down.
Oh, sorry. Theorizing
change in the state in nature.
Uh-huh. Collecting data to test whether or not the change has occurred. And I'm thinking very specifically about hypothesis inferences, a hypothesis test, not confidence intervals. Knowing how to do it. I mean, knowing the steps, and then grounding the process in the context. And then somebody asks a question.
So, are you putting context?
Oh, what do I mean by that? Having the student
put the conclusion, not like we just reject the hypothesis, the null, we're rejecting the null, but actually putting it into the context of the problem, you know, in terms of making a business decision with the result from the hypothesis test.
My understanding is very similar to what you just described. I think of it as having a claim and then gathering data test that claim, and based on the data that you have, you're going to draw conclusions about, you know, is your claim plausible? Does it make sense? Does the data support your claim? But it's kind of, you know, it's a similar idea of keeping it in the context of the problem.
Okay, that sounds good.
Hypothesis testing just basically in terms of, you know, method of, you know, making statistical decisions. But as you guys were talking, Georgette, what I had kind of got hung up on was, you know, I thought you had said that, you know, putting it in context was kind of the last thing that you made them do. And just thinking about one of the articles that we read where they talked about, I think it was the one where they talked, where Bob talked about, no, someone talked about, I don't remember the difference between mass reasoning.
Oh, that
and,
was Bob.
Statistical reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
Was that Bob's article?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was Bob.
Yeah, and talked about context being, you know, like the most relevant thing at the very beginning, whereas context may or may not be appropriate for math, they may or may not need context.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just thinking, as you were saying, talking about what you consider to be hypothesis testing, and just wondering, well, if it really is all about, you know, what is it really all about? Is it just the portion where the students, you know, do the steps or do the procedure and write up, reject, do not reject, and so forth, or is it more? Is it from the start when they were even doing the exploratory data analysis? Is that part of it too? Do you see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's really where I, as you guys could probably tell, I was very caught up in the simulation aspect of it, and when I was going through what, you know, to understand hypothesis testing, what does that really mean?
Right.
I was looking at the results from the student simulation, and even at this point, for them to be able to verbalize what that means, I could take that and move them through hypothesis testing, and I really think that they would have a great understanding based on a simulation. So I looked at his questions that he asked. Says, you know, what does it mean to understand hypothesis testing? Does it mean carrying out the steps and procedures? For me, the procedure would be not the procedure, but if they were looking at a simulation, to be able to verbalize the question, verbalize the results based on what they're seeing, the numbers right in front of them, and then we'd have to talk about, can you generalize that to the population through, you know, X, Y, Z. But that really just hit such a chord with me, because I've been doing simulations for a lot of years, and I really think that the students see it. They like to do the simulations, and they say, oh, well, you know, based on what I have in front of me, this is what I have. And then if everybody in the classroom is doing a different simulation and we put all the results on the board,
mm-hmm.
they're like, oh, this is really happening. This is really the data.
Mm-hmm.
So I think to understand hypothesis testing is to understand the data.
Right.
You know, not only to be able to verbalize the question, the results, certainly that would have to come, but they have to know the data and be able to work with it.
Because, I mean, hypothesis testing falls under the umbrella of statistical inference, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Confidence
it's
intervals.
It's not the only means. I mean, it falls under the umbrella.
Right.
Yeah, I'm really curious, looking forward to doing some research on it, because I learned it kind of old school, like where you just memorize the steps, do the math, all that
mm-hmm.
kind of stuff, and I grasp it because I'm good at math, you know. So I'm curious about what, you know, an average student would understand. You know what I mean? I mean, not without sounding, you know, arrogant or whatever, but, you know, I mean, just what the students in my classroom, are they really going to, are they really learning more by doing different types of activities, you know, and how can we tell? And so I think it would be great to sit down and just sort of examine their reasoning, you know, by interviewing them and seeing what they think.
I think we would probably need to really, because there's a lot going on in hypothesis testing. You know, so it's not a big question of do students understand hypothesis testing. You know, there are all of these pieces that can be further broken down. Do they understand the concept of a hypothesis?
Mm-hmm.
Do they understand the concept of a null hypothesis? Right? I mean, I sat in on someone's class at the very beginning, one of our adjunct hires, and the definition of a null hypothesis that she gave was that the null hypothesis always has an equal sign.
Oh.
Do you see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Do our students understand what a null hypothesis is? Do they understand what a critical value is? Do they understand, of course, there's a lot of stuff out there on the p-value, but I just feel, and I think as we go along, there's just, there's a lot going on under just hypothesis testing that we can look at. You know what I mean?
And I think sometimes
we really understand hypothesis tests.
I think,
and maybe
one
I'm
of the
overthinking
points,
this. Andy, any thoughts? Let's see.
Yeah, several. I think you're right. I think there's a lot of aspects that go into hypothesis tests, even if you break that apart from confidence intervals and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if you might need to focus more. I mean, you all started off with thinking about inference,
mm-hmm.
and kind of what goes into that, and then you've specified it further now, and you think you're into hypothesis tests more. But I wonder if you even need to specify it further.
That's what I was
thinking. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was going to say that in the articles, I think the idea was there's so much to hypothesis testing that I think that's where they were going to break it down to, do you need to teach critical value and p-value and, you know, everything that's in the concept of hypothesis testing, or can you limit it to a few things that they would know well? And I believe it was George Cobb that said, you know, that's where if you back off a little bit and look at the bigger picture, that you don't have to get into these teeny tiny details, you know, that I think he was talking about those epicycles, adding them on and adding them on, and we're adding things on because we couldn't do other things. Well, now we can do the other things, and we can remove ourselves from all those tiny details and get a bigger picture.
If we were to narrow it down from, you know, hypothesis testing to break it down further, what parts would you be interested in looking into? I can tell you what I was leaning towards.
Okay.
I was thinking maybe looking at the p-value, because it seems like there's a lot that goes into that. So maybe breaking it down. Well, actually, it's a toss-up between the null hypothesis and the p-value.
I feel like there may be a lot of literature specifically on the p-value. I feel like I've read things already about the p-value, which is not a bad thing. So, the p-value just always seems like a really natural place, I think. One thing that I know my student, I just wonder about my students, in terms of when I hear them speak about statistics, they always interchange the critical value and the test statistic.
Mm-hmm.
And I know one of the articles said, you know, we really should be, they suggest not doing rejection region method, hence no need for a critical value.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that's just one other thing that I might be interested in, getting to student understanding of what a test statistic really is. And I suppose that kind of ties in with student understanding of a point estimate. I mean, a point estimate, point estimation is just something under statistical inference. And I suppose that ties into p-value also, because we have the students compute the p-value, you know, by hand is what we say, because a lot of our students are going on to the business school and they don't, like the students, to just crank it out on their TI-83. So I guess I'm thinking p-value is a good idea. Test statistic, student understanding of, you know, what the test statistic really is and how point estimation in general works. Because I think that might have something to do with fail to interpret the p-value or how they understand or misunderstand the p-value. It's not understanding the whole point estimation idea. Is that making sense?
Mm-hmm. I agree that once they get the test statistic, a lot of times if they are using the technology, they pass right over the test statistic and just look at the p-value. And I was like, you know, I always say, well, time out. What are you comparing that to? And
I always have students sometimes ask me, like, you know, if it's the basic test statistic, and they say, well, where do we get this, you know, mu naught from? You know what I mean? And it's not, or they want to say that X, Y is the same as mu or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fundamental not understanding that this is, you know, a representation of your data. You know, it's like they see test statistics, but they don't really think about what that term means either. You know, and then they have to use the test statistic to find the p-value. So it's just kind of, well, in a traditional historical classroom they do. It's just kind of, you know, making the problem worse as it goes along, because they're using something they don't fully understand to compute something else that they don't fully understand.
Mm-hmm. I like that a lot, Aisha, because so many times, too, then when they're looking at the test statistic, if you look at it, and I don't know if you guys teach with the formula first or if they just get the test statistic from the technology, but in the formula, all of them are following the same idea. You know, it's the statistic minus the parameter divided by the standard error, and that really translates to all the types of the test statistics throughout. That might be a really great place to start. And also, you can look at the numerator being the distance. If you're, you know, if you're sketching that as well, if you're sketching it on the curve, the distance, how far away are you just by chance? You know, is it just by chance, or is there something else going on there?
Mm-hmm.
And also, how plausible is the null given how far away the observation is from the what the null says the center is?
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, I have students who, I remember there was one worksheet where I gave them, and I said something along the lines of, you know, the test statistic, you know, you can use the test statistic to get an indication of what your p-value would look, you know, how large or small your p-value is going to be. And, you know, there was this one student who was like, what does that mean? You know, and it just really took me back to, okay, what do I need to do to make sure that I'm really hammering certain things in, or to check that they are getting the things that I think they're getting and really making the connection, so that test statistic isn't just step 6 and step 7 is, you know, look at your alternative hypothesis to figure out which p-value stick in this number. Do you know what I mean? So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think p-value, test statistics, those are things I think would be great. But just, again, point estimation and recognizing that this is not... I know I'm talking a lot, maybe it's my medicine, I'm sorry. But the first project came back in a few weeks ago, and I can't tell you how many sentences of, you know, the hypothesis test proves that, even though in step 8, because I do have them do steps, they specifically talk about sufficient or insufficient evidence to support, you know. But then when I ask them to just talk about it outside the whole, you know, 8 steps, you know, procedural thing. Just talk about your results. You know, they talk about proof, you know, that the test has proven things. You know, and I can't imagine, I can't tell you how many times I had to go back in there and correct and talk about it and so forth. So,
it sounds like that's getting at what do we mean when we say there's a significant difference or significant relationship. What does the word significant mean? So they can understand that it's not, you're not proving anything.
Yes.
How much evidence you have to support that cancer is not a plausible explanation or is.
Mm-hmm. And the issue may be the word hypothesis itself, right? Which kind of goes back to, I think, Nairad, to some of the things that you talked about really earlier on in terms of, well, I don't remember if it was Nairad, but at some point in time, there was some discussion, maybe it was one of the RAB groups from last year, about how students, the words that students misunderstand, like significance and those sort of things, maybe they honestly believe that a hypothesis is something that you, that is right, can be proven right or wrong, you know.
So
I don't know.
Okay, so we need to focus on to narrow it down so we can start thinking about questions that we might ask in an interview to get it. Do they get that idea? Thrown out a number of things here that all sound, you know, worth pursuing.
Well, I noted a couple articles in Bob's chapter that talked about, there were two studies that are similar to what we're going to do, where we're going to interview people and look at their reasoning. So one of them was the Konold, K-O-N-O-L-D. The other one was Makros and Russell. So those are in Bob's chapter.
Okay.
And then I found an article, which I had to pay $30 for, so I'm hoping we use it. So it's from 1979, but it's Students' Understanding of the Logic of Hypothesis Testing from the Journal of Research and Science Teaching. And apparently in science teaching, there's been some studies on how students understand hypothesis testing. So, which I will mail to everyone if you guys decide that we're going to read it, because that's silly that all of us should have to pay for it.
So should we be focusing in on finding articles specifically related to p-value or test statistic or whatever it may be that we choose to go with?
Well, sure. I have nothing prepared, though, because I didn't know we were going to be suggesting articles more that narrow.
Can I just go back for a minute, please? Georgette, could you tell me the name of that article then? Students' Understanding
of the Logic of Hypothesis Testing.
Thank you.
Okay. And it might play in. This article talks about, in science, there's a lot of conditional hypotheses. So, you know, a lot of if-then, and that sort of ties into conditional support for whatever the conclusion is because of, I don't know if I'm sort of trying to say, think out loud and speak at the same time. So it would tie in maybe to the p-value in making decisions. I mean, knowing, you know, in this one situation with this certain set of circumstances, this one question and this particular sample, then, you know, we can make this conclusion. So the conditional nature of it. So anyway.
I went into, on CauseWeb, I went into the literature tab under, there's a searchable literature in Literature Index. And I typed in hypothesis testing, and it gave a page of articles on hypothesis testing. And I'm wondering if – I don't have my computer up right now, but I'm wondering if we did that and typed in hypothesis testing and p-value or, you know, because these articles are right through the – they're specific to statistics education. That might be more direct than doing a, you know, a search –
Google Scholar search?
There's just an article.
So, Jennifer, you said under CauseWeb you went to resources?
Literature index, and that would have been under probably
research. Under research?
Probably.
Go to research and literature.
Literature index.
Literature index, yeah. And then up in the search on the top right-hand corner, type in hypothesis test.
Try p-value for test statistic. I mean, I guess that I'm just thinking out loud also that maybe that might be a place to launch.
There's about 12 on p-value. Two of them are songs, so we can probably skip over the song.
Maybe Andy knows this. Andy, do you know the what's listed on that literature index, has that been put there specifically by cause?
Yeah, I think Joan has a research assistant that's putting the articles in as she finds them, and
okay.
It's pretty comprehensive as far as I know.
Great.
So if you want to find any of these and you don't have access, you can let us know and we can get them for you.
Oh, there are tons of stuff.
Yeah, there's a ton, and I started writing things down. I did a search for hypothesis testing, and there were three from the Teaching Statistics. I'm not familiar with the Teaching Statistics journal, but one was a classroom demonstration of hypothesis testing, one was a useful example when teaching hypothesis testing, and one was called Intro to Ideas of Hypothesis Testing, and that was just three that I saw right off the top. There was also an article about Bob had mentioned last time about in psychology, there has been talk about not using hypothesis testing at all and the theory behind that. There was an article in there also about hypothesis testing in psychology, throwing the baby out with the bathwater. How do college students reason in hypothesis testing, et cetera. So there was quite a bit there.
I found an article outside of the CauseWeb, but that from Statistics in Medicine from the British Medical Journal that was arguing that hypothesis testing and using p-values to determine significance and non-significance, that they felt that using the confidence interval which would give you a range of plausible values to use would be a better way to come to some kind of a result. So I don't know if anyone is interested in that, but that's available as well.
So what's so fun?
I have 252.
Oh, my gosh. This is almost time, isn't it?
That is. We maybe we can finish emailing suggestions to each other and then come up with a list that way?
Yeah, that's probably a good idea.
So what do you think?
Yeah, because I think we need to figure out our next meeting before we leave, so maybe we should do that, and then we can have whatever unfinished business by email.
Okay, so exactly a month away is Thanksgiving weekend, so probably not good, but maybe the week before, 20th? November 20th, how's that sound?
Is that also a Friday?
Yes.
I have class starting at 3 on that day, so I can't do 2, because I have class starting at 3.
You'd have to do later, or?
Earlier.
Earlier?
Like half, like what we did the last time, like 30 minutes earlier, but I know Nairazu has class, right?
Yeah. I'm just going to look at, hold on.
Can we go on a different day? Does it have to be a Friday?
Question.
I could do
I'm that. Available any afternoon, after 12, I'm available.
What other day would work for people? I could do, the only day I couldn't do is Thursday.
Okay.
I teach until about 3:30 or 4 every day.
Oh.
I mean, The issue is that I have a Greek prep course. My study abroad course meets every few Fridays, and I can't move it because it's an actual class. We meet from 3 until 6. So, I mean, if you guys are okay with me leaving 10 minutes early, that's fine, too.
Okay.
So it will be easier. I guess I need to know what role I'll be playing to make sure I don't miss anything.
You are going to be the moderator.
Oh, so I can't just...
Oh, we can cover for you.
Yeah, we could shift moderator to the synthesizer if you have to leave.
Is that okay?
It's okay with me.
We can accommodate that.
Okay. I think so. Okay,
so we're going to go to 20th?
Yeah, so we'll do the 20th at 2
Eastern time?
Yeah.
And so since that's 3 weeks, that sort of limits the time we have available for articles. So how do we want – and we just have a couple minutes to decide. So should we each send out a group email with 3 suggestions maybe or 2 suggestions and then –
Well, 2 suggestions each would be 6. You know, how many of us are there? 4?
There's 4 of us.
4 times 2, 8 articles. There's no way I can read it.
Oh, no, I couldn't either. I mean, do
but
we want to just –
But what about if we say, you know, you pick – 2 articles to read, and you email the rest of us so we know we don't
overlap.
Read one.
Okay.
Can you say that again?
So each one of us picks 2 articles, and then let everybody else know that these are the 2 I'm reading, just so we don't duplicate.
Right.
Oh, so we're all going to read 2 of our own choices. Okay.
Okay.
And we'll send the email out. All right.
And I'm just going to caution you that Teaching Statistics is a British journal that is more geared towards teachers, and it's there's not research in it, usually.
Okay. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to do the synopsis thing? Okay. Are we doing that or not?
A summary?
Yeah.
Yes, we should do that.
Okay.
That's a good idea.
So we send it to the synthesizer? Who's
I am the synthesizer next time.
The synthesizer next time?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right now, let's see, who's the synthesizer today?
I am.
Okay.
So we send to you, Georgette.
Send it to me.
Okay, and you would remind us.
Okay, let me write that down.
Okay, so next time I will be the organizer. Synthesizer will be...
Georgette?
I will be. So next time Jennifer
next
is the organizer,
Aisha
is the moderator, I'm the synthesizer, and Georgette is the recorder.
Okay.
But they're going to send our synopsis to Georgette, who was to be a synthesizer, yes?
Okay. Yep.
Okay.
Okay, so you'll send the articles to me. Great.
Okay.
The summaries.
The summaries, yeah.
Oh, somebody
yeah.
needs to email Bob to find out if he's okay with that date and time. Our next meeting.
Oh.
Let's just make it the 20th. It sounds good. If
okay.
you guys can meet, it's open on my schedule, so if Bob can't, that's fine.
Okay, great.
Okay, great.
Good.
Okay, and just so I'm making sure that I have this clear, when we're looking for the articles, we're looking for p-value and test statistics?
Hypothesis testing, or?
Are we going to narrow it down to the p-value and the test statistic, or are we looking at hypothesis testing still in general? Or let's just see what we get.
Yes.
I think
okay.
we can do one of each.
Okay.
No?
Well, let's see what's out there.
Yes.
But I don't know if the articles break it down as much as we'd like to, so we might have to just look at hypothesis testing and focus on what we're interested in those
right.
articles.
Okay.
Okay. Sounds good.
Sounds great.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks.
This went quickly.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Good call.
I'll figure out how to turn this off now. Bye, everyone.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Aisha.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Please stand by.